Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Dr. Davidson?
Here.
Dr. Davy?
Present.
Dr. Raitt?
Here.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson is recused from the meeting, so I will not call her name. And Dr. Davidson, you have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Item number three is a call to the public. Those wishing to address the committee do not need to request permission in advance. However, the committee may limit those persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number of public comments matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the committee will be given 5 minutes to do so. The committee can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. Now, we have two licensees or applicants here, and they will have time to address the committee during item number five. Are there any other members of the public who would like to address the committee at this point? Okay, hearing none, let's move to item number four, approval of the minutes, October 28th, 2019, regular session minutes. And I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
And a second?
Second. Second.
All right. Any further discussion? I did notice one concern on page one of the regular session minutes. Under item one, the first paragraph, it says no executive sessions were held. I don't believe that's true because we did have an executive session. That's the only correction.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for pointing that out. We will fix that.
Excellent. Any other corrections? Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. All in favor of approving the minutes with that correction, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We have also minutes from October 28th, 2019, the executive session. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second?
A second.
All right, any discussion? Hearing none. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item number five, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Person or representative of the person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make a brief statement to the committee. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. Please use only initials for patients or children and complainants. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. We advise that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. The first complaint to be discussed today is number 20-12 for Eric Frey. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead committee member for this complaint. Would you please provide the committee with an overview of the complaint.
Yes. The complaint in KW alleges that Mr. Frey committed violations of the BACB's professional and ethical compliance code for behavior analysts, and hereforth I'll refer to it as the code. Within an email that was dated on October 8th of 2019, and also in a professional meeting on October 14th of 2019. The specific code violations that were listed included section 104A, stating behavior analysts are truthful and honest and arrange the environment to promote truthful and honest behavior in others. Section 1.06, related to multiple relationships and conflicts of interest, and 2.06, maintaining confidentiality. Mr. Frey responded in a letter to the complainant, but also to the board that paraphrasing his behavior was unprofessional, but may be related to the advocacy of his client and related health issues. In response to the code violation allegation of 1.04, Mr. Frey contended that he was protecting his client and stipulating the concerns of the school. Regarding the allegation of code violation of section 1.06, Mr. Frey disagreed that the multiple relationship existed and that it happened to be more coincidental that the employee's child attended the same school and related to the issues that were going on at the school. And finally, in code 2.06, Mr. Frey argues that there's no violation of that code, as there is no, he was not privy to the individual's personal information, nor did he convey any of that personal information to the parties. And that completes my overview of the case.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone who has requested to speak regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jennifer. The complainant is not present today. She did indicate to me previously that she would be unable to attend due to her work schedule. However, the licensee, Mr. Frey, is also on the line and did indicate to me that he did wish to address the committee.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Frey, please feel free to speak. The committee may have questions for you during this time.
Okay. A brief statement. I contend that my client and the female, his young female peer riding the morning bus to Manzanita, that was not protected on two grounds. First, district staffing policies is not patient medical info and therefore not covered by HIPAA. Second, even if it was patient info, there is no expectation of privacy over the info because it was available to any parent who observed his or her child getting on or off the special education bus. That's it. That's my statement.
All right, thank you. The committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruption from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jennifer. I just wanted to clarify to check if the committee members have any questions for Mr. Frey before they begin deliberations.
Did you all hear that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Jennifer, is it permissible that in the middle of deliberation that if questions arise that we may ask Mr. Frey, or do we need to address Mr. Frey at this time?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is Mark Harris, and absolutely the best time to ask questions of the licensee is certainly before you deliberate, but during your deliberations, if questions do come up, it's at the chair's discretion to ask them of the licensee.
I'm sorry, but Mr. Harris, if that was you, could you be closer to the microphone?
Absolutely. And is this, yeah. Can you hear me okay? Is that a little better?
Barely.
Maybe I can move. Is there a... Mr. Chairman, members of the board, is that better?
Oh, much better. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank Kathy for giving her seat to me. The short answer is yes. The best time to ask questions of the licensee, though, is during, before deliberations. But, of course, if during deliberations you have any questions for the licensee that you believe will help clarify any issues that any member of the committee may have, you're more than welcome to ask questions of the licensee. It's really at the chair's discretion.
Okay. So are there any questions for the licensee at this time?
Yes, this is Dr. Davey. If no one else has questions, I will see you.
Dr. Davey.
Thank you. Mr. Frey, would you mind just kind of walking us through what you've done post this interaction with the district and your staff to help rectify any potential situations like this in the future?
Well, I did issue an apology by email to Principal Bowling, and she did accept. And following up, I did have conversations with the involved staff, RBT1, RBT2, RBT3, taking responsibility for my, as I stated in my response, my turgid, bombastic, and unprofessional email. Apologized to them, also acknowledged that this is no way to model any kind of true collaborative effort. This is not what we want to do. We don't want to burn a bridge. So apologies to my staff discussing that this is not appropriate, and it was indeed unprofessional, and that's why I just confirmed in my discussions that this is an apology was issued to all the ones, RBT 1, 2, and 3, and just tried to take full responsibility for my actions. I try to own my behavior. I think that's something I try to do when it is pointed out to me. And in this case, I think I did to my own staff. So that's something that was done. I followed up with each involved RBT.
Dr. Davey, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, do you mind if I ask an objective question in there? Mr. Frey, one point that you made in the apology letter that has been and discussed also in the letter to the board is there's an admission of intermittent insomnia condition that resulted in negative mood affected by the quote. One question I have for you, if that is in fact a possible issue, how do you foresee, I guess, knowing that, how would you move forward in the future, and how do you plan on dealing with that as you move forward for profession as well?
Right. Okay, that's a great question. So I hope I didn't start too soon.
I'll just remind committee members that we do not discuss diagnoses of anyone on the phone. So I'm sure our Attorney General would agree to that. So please refrain from that, correct?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is correct. But you do have the opportunity to go into executive session. Let me just see how the agenda...
It can be discussed in general terms, correct?
It can, yeah. And of course, it's always the licensee's ability to waive it. to the extent that he's okay talking about it in public session.
I'd waive that gladly.
Okay, then you're...
Am I free to speak?
Yeah, Dr. Davey, Mr. Harris, thank you for the correction on that. And Mr. Frey, you're comfortable speaking to that? You're waiving your right to...
I am, and okay. Thank you. Thank you to the committee today.
I apologize for that question.
We're all professionals, and I'm not doctoral level, but I've done a great deal of... the reason I moved to Arizona from the East Coast was because of kind of self-diagnosing myself with seasonal affective disorder. I think almost 5 whole months of the year I was, I'd say, moderately affected just moderately affected by the symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. And what I would do going forward is continue. I forgot to use my blue light blocking glasses, and I tend to stay up late and maybe stay on the computer, study, send emails, right? And I fell out of that practice of wearing my blue light glasses. And this, I also want to point out and just comment that right about the time I did send that email was pretty much onset. Back on the East Coast, it was usually the second or third week of October was onset of my symptoms of associated with my SAB, even if I'd never formally been diagnosed. So what I would do going forward was, and that would include a sleep disturbance, that would include some agitation, some level of agitation. And so going forward, I would just do that self-care routine and promote sleep hygiene, you know, just really practice better sleep hygiene and exercise more self-control and just put it out there that this whole thing is a learning opportunity, and that's why I didn't make a really long statement today. I think it's natural consequences, and I think I can get better. I can engage neuroplasticity and move forward and be a much better practitioner as a result of this. But this is my appeal to the committee, and I'll go back to wearing these blue light blocking glasses, which has for me worked pretty well and in mitigating my SAD symptoms. So I would love to go back to and have the opportunity to continue to practice as a behavior analyst and just do this self-control and just realize that I have the responsibility to model these, you know, the professional and ethical code for behavior analysts. And I've had those discussions with the RBT, involved RBT.
Mr. Fett, thank you for the candor and again for that discussion. Appreciate it.
So the onset was usually right about, for me back on Pennsylvania where I came from, the onset was usually like probably the first to third week is usually when I started to feel those changes back on the East Coast.
All right. Well, thank you for responding to that.
Are there other questions for Mr. Fett?
So this is Dr. Davey, just following along the line, BACB application I haven't filled out recently, but I think back in the day when I did, there is a discussion on there whether or not you have any sort of particular ailment that may create a conflict for you to be able to practice as a behavior analyst. Is this something that was previously disclosed on application?
I responded no, because I had controlled that effectively by my self-care regimen, self-prescribed as it was. I've been in a certificate since 2004, and I have not ever had a problem, so I've had increased stressors. If I can engage further candor, I was recently, I'm formally diagnosed with ADD, but so I had just a move and just some increased stressors. I think that just the temporal kind of nature of what's happened in my life up until that email, the time of that email, including a move and a little financial setback that took me for a loop in the vernacularly speaking. So I had increased stressor. So I think the temporal proximity here would apply in relation to why I was able to answer in good conscience that I know on those licensing applications and reapplications. So that's my statement on that.
In the future, do you believe you'll still check no?
In the future, I believe I will check no in good conscience, especially given the natural consequences and given the time I've had to think about this and think about my actions and really consider and not take for granted my role and my status as a board-certified behavior analyst and Arizona licensee, I do feel in good conscience that when I engage self-care practices that have worked for me in the past, and that certainly mitigates the intermittent insomnia, that I could proceed and actually be more effective given engaging neuroplasticity, engaging learning, engaging all the feedback that I'm sure to receive, and just thinking about the ramifications of my actions and statements and emails and any form of communication and going forward.
Just one further question for me around this. So is it your statement today that you have no professional diagnosis of any of the topics you just covered?
Well, I am diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, but not seasonal affective disorder. I'm formally diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. This was about back in Pennsylvania about nine to 11 years ago, I think, is when I was diagnosed as an adult, and not as a child, though.
And it's your statement today that you believe that, in light of this event, that the current mental health issues that are onset are not impacting your ability to practice?
No, I in good conscience can answer that they will not. And again, engaging neuroplasticity and again, further recognition of the natural consequences of my behavior and owning my behavior and exercising self-control, I think I am able to avoid entanglements like this and unprofessional emails. I just don't feel like this was characteristic of my long history or, you know, relatively long history of communicating with school professionals, other allied professionals, behavior analysts, parents. I feel like this was not characteristic of my considerable history of professional communication.
But in your statement, Mr. Frey, you made several statements or several comments in your written statement that the conditions we just talked about could, and you said it today, could have been part of the regarding to how you responded to these situations, whether it was the written email or maybe it was at the meeting. And so that's what my concern lies, is that you can't have it both ways, that, yeah, I've got it under control and this is not a problem, and then you also come back as part of the statement to the board with regard to, yeah, this is probably why this is one reason why this may have occurred. So that's what I'm struggling with right now.
Okay. Well, I don't have any further, I really don't have any further comment.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Frey? I'm wondering if we could address each of the CACB codes referenced in the complaint, 104, 106, 206. And as a committee, have a brief discussion about whether there were in fact violations of it.
That sounds reasonable, Mr. Chairman. Would you like me to read the code directly and then have a discussion about that, or do we want to just read it textually and then have a communication about it?
I have it up on my screen. I don't know if other members do, but 104 relates to integrity. Is the behavior analyst truthful and honest, and arrange the environment to promote truthful, honest behaviors of others. I believe that was a concern of the complainant.
That's correct.
So do we have evidence that Mr. Frey was not truthful and honest, or did something to arrange an environment that didn't promote truthful and honest behavior in others?
Mr. Chairman, in my review, are we going to consider this deliberation time? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought we were in deliberation at this point.
Okay. Then, from my review of the materials provided, I did not note that there was an issue or a violation of being truthful or honest to the BACB code section 1.04A on the part of Mr. Frey.
Okay. Other committee members, do you see evidence of that?
Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Rates, and I would agree. I too did not find evidence of this in the review.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would you like me to lead this discussion, or are there any other comments on that?
Yeah, I guess I would. I also, as a committee member, I did not see evidence of a violation of 104. And I will gladly send it back over to you as a legal professional.
The next allegation was section 1.06 of the code, and that code deals with multiple relationships and conflicts of interest. In my opinion, there did not appear to be a violation of this code based on the information given in the materials.
Thank you. Other committee members.
This is Dr. Raitz, and again, I would agree. I did not find evidence of violation of this code in my review.
Okay, thank you. I'm rereading it right now. I did not see evidence of violation of 106 either.
I agree.
Okay.
And then the final allegation was concerning section 2.06 of the code in relation to maintaining confidentiality. And likewise, the materials didn't support that allegation either, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you. Is it fair to say that confidentiality might have been broken by one or more of the RPQs that Mr. Frey supervised?
Mr. Chairman, could you elaborate, like, what specifically do you see in that?
There were items listed in the complaint that others had said about a member being served by Mr. Frey and his company, but Mr. Frey was not reported as having said them. For example, I just lost it. Does anybody remember language to the effect of, okay, that's our boy?
That is in there. I agree that is in there. Do you want further time to discuss that, or can I respond to that?
No, please respond.
So the allegations, as I read them, is that Mr. Frey was alleged to have violated this code, and the RBT that for example, what have you mentioned, said our boy, and so on, well, they're under the supervision of Mr. Frey. It was not, in fact, Mr. Frey himself who possibly violated that code.
Thank you. That was my understanding as well. Mr. Frey, you you stated that in after this event, you apologized. And you apologize to your RBQ as well. I wonder if you could tell us about any discussion you had with them about maintaining confidentiality.
I did not, by virtue of the fact that this was protected information, and we used client initials only, and this was in the setting of a small group supervision and using the client initials, and so basically based by the listener behavior of RBT number two, based on just listener behavior, listener responding, she heard Manzanita, she heard me recounting the fact that he had been aggressive on the bus, at least on two occasions, and that's when RBT chimed in and just said, I know exactly who you're talking, RBT2, I know exactly who you're talking about. I believe this is the child who also skipped my son. And so that's kind of how that happened. I just, by virtue of listener, just listener behavior, listener responding, I did not prompt RBT2 to respond. I did not even look at her, really. I just, she just chimed in. You know, this was not unsolicited. And I maintain just, this is just listener behavior. And I see that it's my responsibility. I was always taught, and I've been taught by some great ones, either in person or by virtue of being a behavior analyst for a little while here. I was always taught reduce harm to people, reduce risk of property damage, and in this case, we'll say animals as well, and I'm an animal lover. But I just acted, I believe, judiciously to obtain the information I needed to act quickly. And while rash and unprofessional, and I also want to back up and say that I do take my work, as we all do, I'm invested in this work. And the sleep, the temporal proximity of the concerns, the prior reported concerns of at least two incidences of moderate level aggression towards the animal, the service dog, on the ride into school, as well as towards the female peer when MW entered the morning bus to Manzanita. You know, for me, I guess I just think my wheels were turning in the vernacular, so to speak. My wheels were turning. And that also can interfere, you know, at times with as it does for us, we have concerns or things that we're integrating that we're trying to, at least I'll speak for myself, just trying to make sense of what I'm hearing, what I was hearing and what had also been reported, I might add, by, I think it was, I'll just say Ms. Sue, or I think it was Ms. Sue. So MW had not only aggressed against this female peer and her service animal on the morning bus, allegedly, reportedly, she also, MW also aggressed to at least a moderately severe
your degree during school transitions, and so I was a little bit unclear as to why the school officials, and I think I don't want to be digressing here, but I believe I acted to reduce harm to people, animals, property, and maybe it was a situation where fire ready aim or something like that, where I didn't have all my ducks in a row, and again, I acknowledge my unprofessional communication, but I was responding to, I believe, at least an exigency, a clinical exigency, because, and then when the school reported that during the 10-14 IEP, review or the IEP,
I'm sorry, but I think I need to clarify my question. You spoke earlier about using this situation as a learning experience and talking to your RBTs about your own unprofessional behavior. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess what I was asking was, did you also, in this learning opportunity, use this as an opportunity to remind them of the need for maintaining confidentiality?
I really, again, I just maintain, my memory, if my memory serves me correctly, I'm going to go back to my statement that that was not HIPAA protected, nor was confidentiality nor HIPAA violated in this case. There was no HIPAA violation on two grounds. District staffing policies is not patient medical info and therefore not covered by HIPAA. Second, even if it was patient info, there is no expectation of privacy over the info because it was available to any parent. So both RBTs were working with the company. It was a small group setting. There were no other RBTs present. So I just maintained that. That's my response on that one. Okay, I don't. So it's important to. It's important. If I may just add this, both RBTs are not seeing. Maybe perhaps there's a need for further education. I'm not a HIPAA expert. I'm not a world class expert on this topic. But they're pretty ethical people. They both have master's degrees. They're educated. They're very upstanding people, and they have helped our clients very, very much, and not just MW, but and they've helped other clients. So I really trust their judgment and their ability to communicate to me when they feel uncomfortable and when my practices or my disclosures would violate. I try to maintain a culture of open communication, honesty, and I don't want to punish anyone. I'm not the type to hear this and then to have my hackles raised or be offended. I'm teachable and coachable, and I have amazing RBTs that I work with. And if they had a concern, they would have told me. They would have told me. But both RBT 1, 2, and 3 said, We take no issue with how you handle this. I can't speak for them right now, but I feel like they too believe that by virtue of a small community, by propinquity, and by just a small community of practitioners that we have in Tucson, they have not communicated to me that that this is an issue for them, that I've lost status. In fact, to the contrary, or that I've lost any kind of ability to lead, guide, and direct, or to continue to provide direction and to work under my license. I have not heard that in any instance from all three RBTs. I've heard that they agree and that the RBT, that RBT wrote. Okay. Well, the RBT wrote the RBT wrote the second letter, response letter, and I don't know if that was allowed, but the RBT two, this was her son. Her son had gotten kicked. Her son's a stakeholder. RBT two is a stakeholder. They're stakeholders in this whole arrangement, in this whole happening, in this whole occurrence. And they have a right to speak up, and they have a right to say, in my opinion, they have a right to say, I'm either, I've lost respect, or I don't see that what you did was right, and they're not doing that. Especially RBT2, who wrote the second response letter to the board. She's saying, you know, he kicked my own son, and he did it multiple times. So I believe there's stakeholders in this, and I believe that I advocated for not only MW and the female peer and the female, the dog, but I advocated for RBT2's own son. So I think we're stakeholders, so I'll end it there.
Thank you. I have no more questions. Mr. Stenoff, are there other deliberation items that you'd like to address?
No, out of the allegations, those were the three that were listed as possible code violations. And I, based on the discussion or the deliberation, it doesn't appear that any of those codes were violated.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion by committee members about the code or anything else regarding this?
My discussion is this, and it's directed at Mr. Frey and the RBT. They need to conduct themselves in a fashion that would make all of us proud, and they need to continue to think about the kind of conduct that are being made in a public arena, whether that's in the school setting, on the playground, near the bus. You know, again, I'm not going to dispute the questions around whether HIPAA is violated or not. But we are professional. We are held to a professional standard. And I think that we are getting very close to crossing the line here. And I am not particularly feeling very, you know, feeling super confident that that has been instilled in both our licensees, who are here on the phone, and the RBT. And so I do have some concern about that. And I don't know that the gravity of the situation has set in. And so I would hope that as the individuals that are a part of this complaint listen to these deliberations, they understand how serious they are and how serious this committee and ultimately the board takes the complaints as they come forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I do want to follow up with a point that Dr. Davy made as well and kind of expand that a little bit more too. But we, in Arizona, well, the number of BCBA is increasing. We still are in a very small community, and there is going to be overlap between parents and professional duties. And I would strongly encourage that discussion happen with the RBTs. And, you know, Mr. Frey, you pointed out earlier that they didn't feel that you'd done anything wrong, but you as a supervisor need to make that determination. Well, there's a two-way conversation. There also needs to be guidance and leadership directing RBTs about what exactly is professional, and I appreciate the fact that you apologize to them, but as Dr. Davy pointed out, is that it is necessary that we present ourselves in such a decorum that, or use decorum when we are interacting, and there does need to be clarity between my role as a parent and my role as an RBT and a professional, and that line has to be clearly delineated. Because of the size of our community that we work in. So,
thank you. So we are a committee. We do not make a final determination. We make a recommendation to the full board. We have the decision to make here in terms of what our recommendation would be to the board. We could recommend dismissal. We could refer to the board for a potential violation. What are some other options available to us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. One of the other options that the committee could recommend to the board is a non-disciplinary letter of concern. In that letter of concern, the committee would want to specify what the specific concerns are.
Okay. Did everyone hear that?
Committee members, I apologize. This is Jennifer. The other option that the committee could recommend to the board is a non-disciplinary consent agreement where the professional would be required to complete a certain number of continuing education credits. And the committee could specify how many CE hours and in what particular area they thought would be pertinent.
Letter of concern would automatically come with a recommendation for continuing education in certain areas?
No, the letter of concern is different than a non-disciplinary consent agreement. The letter of concern is simply just that. It's just a letter that is issued to the professional as a disposition in the matter. A non-disciplinary consent agreement is where the professional would be required to complete a certain number of CE hours as ultimately determined by the board.
Okay, so we have those options. Move to dismiss, issue a letter of concern, issue a non-disciplinary requirement for continuing education, or refer for a possible violation. Is there a motion for any of those?
To be moved to the board with a recommendation to be dismissed.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. We discussion.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is my concern is just full dismissal. Is that there's just enough here that I think a letter of concern may be warranted, and I would just think that there's just enough in terms of the testimony we heard today and some of the documentation that is something I would have likely liked to have seen. However, this is a democracy, and I appreciate that. My discussion points,
sir. Dr. Davey, I am in agreement with you. I have a concern too, and part of that relates to the questioning that you offered earlier. To be able to answer on a future application, something to the effect of, do you have any conditions that might impair or impede your ability to practice? And the rationale for Mr. Frey's behavior was that of the conditions he disclosed. And yet, what he told us is that he's got it under control, essentially, that he believes it won't be a problem in the future. And I hope that that is, in fact, true. I just wonder if a disclosure of such and the opportunity to explain himself it might not be appropriate in the future. I have a slight concern with that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Yes.
So I guess I would like to understand the parameters of the letters of concern. If there are concerns, I certainly have some, as we discussed in our deliberation. But I'd also like to know what is the parameters of the letter of concern, or specifically, what does that mean? What is the letter concerned about, and what's the purpose of it? Other than to express concern, if that's it, then I would agree. But if the letter of concern means that there is a violation, but we're just concerned, but we're going to move on, then I'm not comfortable with that. But if a letter of concern includes the discussion that you and Dr. Davey just had, then I would be comfortable with that.
Yeah. And Mr. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is Mark Harris, and if I could try to answer that question. It is a non-disciplinary action by the board. So you, by recommending that a case be dismissed with the issuance of a letter of concern, you're not finding a violation of your Practice Act or your Code of Ethics. And basically, the letter of concern can pretty much articulate anything that came up during this particular case. And what I'm hearing is that if you were to go down that path, it would be something along the lines of the BC being required to always adhere to the ethical principles in their daily activities. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Dr. Davey, did that capture your concern?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we have a motion for it to be dismissed. We have a second. We've discussed an alternative. Is there any further discussion?
I think at this point, the discussion is whether or not the motion is going to be modified, removed, or moved forward.
So, Mr. Chairman, committee members, I guess I have further questions, and based on the information we just received from Mr. Harris. The question I have then is, if, as you said, Mr. Chairman, regarding the concern we had regarding the ability to practice, given the medical concerns, are those binding in a concern letter, or is it merely a recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is Mark Harris. It is not binding. You're just basically, by issuing the letter of concern, saying, you as a professional need to be aware of it's ultimately your responsibility to ensure that you can practice safely and competently in accordance with all of the statutes and regulations. And that next time if we get a complaint like this, you know, the outcome may be a little bit different based upon the fact that, based upon the fact that we had a similar case that we decided to dismiss by, you know, in essence, warning you to make sure that, you know, you modify any behavior that you need necessary in order to competently practice. And I would like to, as Jennifer just pointed out, just to note for everybody that that letter of concern is a public record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Dr. Staff, did that answer your question?
It did, yeah, thank you.
So we're at a decision point. Continue with the motion, revise the motion. What are our options?
Mr. Chairman, do I retract or rescind my motion, or can I offer a revision?
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Harris. Perhaps the easiest thing to do, I mean, you can certainly withdraw the motion and make a new one, but if you just simply wanted to amend your motion to include dismissal with the issuance of a letter of concern, and if the second agrees with that friendly amendment, then I think we're in good shape.
I'd like to amend my letter of concern then, Mr. Chairman, my motion. And I motion that we propose to the board that it's dismissed, but I'd also like to add a letter of concern regarding some of the issues that we discussed today, particularly just the collaborative or professional aspect of what occurred in the future, and then also the consideration of dealing with some of the issues that Mr. Frank discussed as well.
Thank you. Dr. Reese, you seconded the original motion. Are you okay with this revision?
Yes, I'm comfortable with that revision. I would just add that given this is a public record, we want to be thoughtful of what and how we discuss that in that letter.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, perhaps it could be wordsmith so that it's clear that it is the behavioral analyst's responsibility to make sure that they always conduct themselves in accordance with all applicable statutes, rules, and codes of conduct. And leave it as somewhat generic as that, with the understanding of the discussion that took place this morning.
Okay. Since the board needs to act on this, will that decision be made at a board meeting where Dr. Davey might be present?
Yes, I believe it'll probably go, will it go next week or the?
No, I would. This complaint would likely be reviewed by the board at their meeting in January.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yes, this complaint would be reviewed by the board at their meeting in January. The board meeting is next week, but that would not be sufficient time for the members to review the information.
So the short answer to you.
I heard you say this complaint would be reviewed at the January board meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Davey, if you are present at this meeting, would you be able to provide the background information?
And And Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, the board, when this matter gets agendized, will have all the materials that you have and will be privy to everything. And Mr. Fry will also be notified of that meeting and be given the opportunity to appear, as will the complainant.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if Mr. Fry is still on the line, we may want to explain to him what just transpired. And I would be happy to do that if you'd like. Mr. Fry, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I hope that you were able to follow what the committee just did, but this is Mark Harris, the committee's legal advisor, and I just wanted to let you know that the committee voted to dismiss the complaint that was filed against you with the issuance of a non-disciplinary letter of concern. That letter of concern may articulate that it is you as a licensed behavioral analyst's responsibility to always engage yourself in accordance with all the statutes and rules and codes of conduct that govern your practice. This is only a recommendation. It will be heard by the board, I believe, at its January meeting. You will be notified of that meeting and be given the opportunity to appear and address the board at that time. Please understand, though, that this is only a recommendation, and the board is free to modify, reject, or adopt the committee's recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. The next complaint to be discussed today is number 20-16 for applicant Colton Oliver. Dr. Davies, you're the lead committee member for this complaint. Would you please provide the committee an overview of the complaint? Thank you. think I'm going to add the other comment to the section before I turn it back over to you, and that is really for the committee to think about and ponder through this, and that is the, at this particular point, the individual is not in our jurisdiction, as I understand it. The Attorney General can speak to that in a second for us, hopefully. However, because the application was filed, we are now looking at this complaint. And so I want to be clear that the individual is a BC, a BCBA. In fact, the day he received his certificate, confirmation of his certificate, was the day he was terminated on this matter. As such, the BACB obviously received this complaint prior to us receiving it, and would have jurisdiction in this matter had this application not been filed. And so I just want to kind of put that out there as a timing. I believe we also have information from the BACB that was provided in our packet that says that they are looking at this matter currently, and that no decision has been made. So those are my comments. It's just just the summary of my review. I yield back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Gage.
And Ms.
I'm reminded that we received recent information from on this complaint investigation, and I need to ask our committee members, did everyone have a chance to read all the information that was available to us?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody not able to read the information that was set up on this complaint? Okay, hearing none, I'm comfortable moving forward.
And Mr. Chairman, I do want to let you and the committee members know that the complainant, DW, is on the phone and indicated that she would like to address the committee. And as well, we have the applicant, Mr. Oliver, on the phone, who will also be addressing the committee as well.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Davey again. I guess I would just ask the question to the Attorney General before we get too far down this road about the jurisdiction matter, right? I guess I would just like some understanding as to, I don't disagree that the application, because it came forward, has brought this information to us, that is now being presented to us. But I'm wondering if this is a possible path to say that at this point maybe we suggest something to the point of having the individual withdraw the application and pending what the PACB finds, take this back up at a later date. But I'm not clear on how exactly that would happen unless the Attorney General has some discussion around that, or if any of the board members have any discussion around that.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd be more than happy to address that if you'd like.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And very good question. And because he is an applicant and it was disclosed on his application, you do have jurisdiction to consider the issue in determining whether or not he meets all of the minimum requirements for license for certification.
The outcomes of this could be, one, we reject the application, two, we accept the application, three, we suggest to the applicant they might withdraw this application. Those are the three possibilities, correct?
I think there's a fourth in that you could offer the you could recommend to the board to license the applicant subject to a consent agreement with whatever terms and conditions you deem appropriate based upon your findings, and then perhaps if not accepted, then maybe deny the application. So I think there may be a fourth option available to you.
And just to clarify to what Mr. Harris was saying, if the committee did want to consider making a recommendation to deny the application, it would be for unprofessional conduct pursuant to one of the violations listed.
Yeah, assuming all the other.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anyone present who has requested to speak regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the complainant DW is present on the phone and has requested to speak.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My name is DW and I am the complainant on this matter. I'm attending today on behalf of the organization in which Mr. Oliver was employed from October of 2018 to September of 2019. I did provide you guys a factual overview of our final findings of the internal investigation, our current status of the investigation by the other regulatory parties, and a summary of the actions our organization is going to take to reduce this risk of it happening again. In total, our investigation has concluded excessive billing occurred across three different supervisors and involved four separate clients. Our estimated costs to date are about $5,000 in recruitment, paid wages, and administrative burden. This cost does not include the suspected misreporting of non-billable admin time. As you recall, and one of the committee members did specify, we were actually monitoring this particular employee because we had some red flags raised regarding some non-billable tasks. I'm here mostly to answer any questions that the committee may have, but I do want to just provide a few key points. First and foremost, I do want to acknowledge that Mr. Oliver was a skilled up-and-coming clinician. He was seen as a leader in the organization and was liked by most of the supervisors and colleagues as well as the clients that he was serving. He was a very hard worker. His ambition to grow professionally was great, and he demonstrated competence and proficiency in many of the BCBA task force areas. I do want to note that Mr. Oliver was not simply an RBT at the time the activities took place. He had been an RBT since 2017. He was a matriculated grad student, and he was also eligible for his exam when some of these things happened. We had him in a post-supervision, like fellow-like position, and we were actually systematically granting him autonomy in effort to prepare him for his own caseload, knowing that he was coming up for his exam. I'm going to add, because I heard what Dr. Davey had said about this being an oversight, and I'm going to just respectfully disagree. One, our findings are significant that this was not an oversight. The other thing is that on the one particular case in which we actually had substantial data on, there was multiple opportunities in which the technician was asked what hours and what the schedule of the services for the client should be, as Mr. Oliver was the lead on the case, and so we were trying to work through getting him to complete the assessment and help us develop the treatment plan. And so there were ample opportunities for Mr. Oliver to tell us that the child was at lunch and he was leaving services, and that was not what happened. So our investigation did conclude that about 56% of the claims that we reviewed were repaying the insurance could have been a result of rounding errors. Many of those errors were done early in employment, and there's distinct upward trends of potentially fraudulent activities after coaching occurred, in which a supervisor did provide feedback to the billable hours, and even more so in correlation with the increase of case autonomy post-supervision and coursework. Fortunately for our organization, increasing autonomy of our staff does not replace our requirements to supervise, and therefore we were able to identify the patterns of fraudulent billing as well as an occurrence of forgery in which Mr. Oliver forged someone else's signature rather quickly, and we took immediate action. Most importantly, I want to note that this has been a very sombering experience for most of us. As a training organization, we pride ourselves in the ability to support staff through opportunities of learning and growth. We believe that everyone should have the opportunity to learn from their mistakes and that everyone has the potential to be successful in this field. This has been an extremely difficult decision and process for us. Ultimately, our final decision was based on the occurrence of forgery, and for us, that goes beyond just a oversight and beyond just issue and into a significant professional integrity issue. And given the status at which Mr. Oliver had been trained, he graduated with a master's degree in ABA, he was eligible to sit for his exam. I think that it's extremely concerning for the general public as it has dangerous implications for them. If you're familiar with Blue Cross Blue Shield, then you would know that we don't actually have a group contract, it's an individual contract. So the fact that it happened across multiple supervisors and multiple kids, I mean, this put multiple BCBAs who are currently independently practicing at risk, and that has been very difficult for us to kind of work through and work past. And we also want to acknowledge that upon dismissal of employment, Mr. Oliver did not outwardly admit to engaging in the fraudulent act. He did not acknowledge the forgery. We do have timestamps and GPS coordinates to substantiate it. However, his concluding statement to us was, at the end of the day, I had to provide for myself, which was a statement that stood out for all of us as having pretty significant implications. And while it wasn't a direct admission, it was substantial to how we felt his current status and professional integrity lied. And it was a direct violation of our own core values of benefiting others. So to wrap up the comments, I would just like to thank you guys for reviewing this matter, taking it into consideration and understanding the seriousness of our concerns. I am here if you have any questions that you may have for me.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Mr. Chair, just one clarification for DW on the phone. My statement of oversight was actually the applicant's response. That read the situation was an oversight on his part, and that he takes responsibility for the inconsistency in filling that the signatures provided. It was not my statement. So thank you.
Yes, Dr. Davey, thank you. I meant that, and I agree with that. I understood that as well. I was just simply saying that having heard that, I disagree with the applicant's response. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for DW at this point? Okay, hearing none. Mr. Oliver, would you please speak to the committee at this point, and we may have some questions for you during this time.
Yes, of course. Thank you. First, I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to meet the committee, Mr. Chairman, DW, the Attorney General as well. You know, I've had a lot of time to think between the time that this complaint was filed and the date of this meeting. And I would like to sincerely apologize to not just the members of this committee, but also my previous employer, DW, as well as the clients and other governing parties that her organization represents. As I had stated before, I made a foolish and careless mistake and took short-term gratification over long-term success and even morality. For this, I am truly sorry and willing to accept any actions the board finds necessary for this complaint. I have understood the ramifications of these decisions and these actions that I have taken, the damage that has caused to the field of applied behavior analysis, the Aspen organization, its clients, and other entities as well. I do understand the full scope of these actions and how they have negatively impacted the parties involved. I've worked in the field since 2015, and I've always tried to improve the lives of others. And as DW has stated previously, that was reflected in the work that I had done, not only in my time at the organization that she currently pertains ownership to, but as well as my previous experience in the field. And in regards to the comments made about my final comments made and relates to the exit interview that I had had from the Aspen organization. I'd like to just clarify those as well. My comments were never made to insinuate that I was solely trying to benefit myself, but that I was acting in a manner in which I was trying to balance my work schedule as well as travel time and other responsibilities related with the job task. I never meant for my intentions to come across as self-benefiting or act in a way that was selfish or self-centered. In fact, and I will repeat this, but the actions in question were never committed in malice or with malintent. As I stated previously, they were foolish and careless mistakes on my part. And as of being notified of these complaints, I've had a lot of time to think about those actions and decisions. And try to understand the full scope of that position and those actions at that time. I ask that the board consider not simply the complaint filed against me, but the full scope of work for this application for licensure. And that concludes my my statement to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Albert. Are there any questions for Mr. Albert from the panel? Okay. Dr. Davey, would you please proceed with discussion for deliberation?
Actually, I have a few questions for Mr. Oliver, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Oliver, while you know, I appreciate how the statement is made, appreciate that you are a young professional that has been entering into the field for the past 5 years through your work and through your efforts with different agencies and different different programs. And I also would take this time to also just be appreciative of the information the DW and her agencies put forward in terms of their root cause analysis and their actions moving forward. I have more confidence in the agency to continue to monitor, train, and move forward young professionals in our field. Which brings me back to you, Mr. Oliver. With regard to your experiences with other agencies, your experiences in working through billing processes at other agencies, and your time as a student, as a practicum individual, is this something that you engaged in a regular practice, or is this an area that was not explained to you in other venues? Like, how did one come to the conclusion that the billing practices you were engaged in were acceptable and normal?
Thank you for your question. I'd like to answer that by stating that there are some specifics with this specific complaint that was filed in regards to the location of the client, the schedule of the client, and the overall caseload management that was assigned to me at that time. In regards to my previous employment prior to the organization represented by DW, there have been no other instances of training or contact or initiation for complaints filed against me prior to this one. And so I would say that this specific case has some nuance to it and some gritty details that might stand out compared to other cases or other employment opportunities as well. Does that answer your question?
And just following along the lines, in light of, this is my favorite question, but in light of what walk us through what you're going to do different
a great question. So first and foremost, at the onset of this complaint, I made it and stated very clearly to the organization in question that I was in full understanding of the complaint filed against me, and I have worked in accordance with that organization to provide communication, deliver any material that were lent out by the organization, open lines of communication in terms of making sure that this process goes smoothly for that organization as best as I can on my part. That was initiated at the start of, or I guess on the date of this complaint. From there, I have kept open lines of communication with members of the organization for anything, any documentation or materials, communication, educational materials that they may need, and provided them with that as soon as possible, without obligation, without really any sort of conflict. To further that I hope reflects the level of understanding and humility that I'm sort of facing with this complaint, and how I've decided to handle it and sort of take it on. I think the biggest thing to me has been, you know, really taking a look at myself in the mirror and really trying to learn from this mistake and really understand where I was at when these complaints were filed, where I was at when I made these decisions, and how I've moved through this process since September of 2019. I've also taken actions with other governing bodies, for example, the BCBA, or BCABA, excuse me. I have self-reported this incident to them within the 30-day grace period that they've provided, providing all the documentation that I have available to me to give to this governing body, as well as the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners, being in communication with them, indicating that this was going to be an issue on my initial license and application, and other things of that nature.
Thank you. Yes, I did. In reviewing your information, I see that you had moved through the self-disclosure process with the ACB, and that is the correct subject of that. Mr. Chair, that's the conclusion of my questions. I don't know if I'd like to hear from if any other committee members have any questions. Otherwise, I will turn it back over to you.
Are there other questions from committee members? Could we ask questions of DW at this time as well?
Mr. Chair, I'm okay with it if it's allowed.
Can you explain in the information that you shared with us the concern of fraud happened not only before feedback and supervision, but continued after feedback and supervision? Do I have that correct?
Correct. So in the information that I provided, we reviewed about 55 occurrences of overbilling. The occurrences of overbilling were from November of 2018 until current. Between November of 2018 and I think I don't have it in front of me, but about the beginning of April, which is around occurrence number 30, we realized that it was probably a rounding rule issue. And on two separate occasions, one of the supervisors reached out to Mr. Oliver, once on April 1st and once on May 1st, and documented her attempt to clarify to Mr. Oliver that he needed to put accurate times and that by not doing so, it would be considered fraudulent. To notice that beyond May, which is around the time that he conferred his degree, and I've got a note there for when his degree was conferred, the occurrence has actually increased, and they increased across multiple clients. It was not just a single client. They occurred more substantially with the one client that was a Tommy. With the other clients, there were siblings also receiving services in the home, so there was oftentimes a second provider present. And there were times in which the time was not changed, but a supervisor would show up, and then the supervisor would be able to say, you need to go in and change your time. So the pattern really does show that as more autonomy was provided to Mr. Oliver under the idea that he had finished the supervision in April, he was eligible to sit for his exam, he had finished his degree, we were prepping him with the caseload, the more autonomy he had, the more occurrences we saw. Our final breaking straw was when Mr. Oliver called a supervisor during the time he was supposed to be in a session. He not once relayed to anybody, scheduling a supervisor, anybody, that he had been leaving sessions early or that the child was not in need of anything during lunch. And then while on the phone, the supervisor noticed the signature, and the forgery is what ultimately we couldn't look past as a training issue, was the forged signature.
And thank you. And those things happened after the supervisor feedback?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I believe that the documents for the supervisor feedback and the supervisor emails were provided to the board.
Yes, they were. Thank you. Mr. Oliver, can you respond and explain why these happened even after you were provided feedback and supervision?
I guess what I would like to say in regards to those statements, pertains mostly to the rounding of the billing code provided through the system that was used through that organization. I am not aware of the volume that DW has stated regarding the incident, but this is honestly news to me as it pertains to the quantity and volume of incidents that DW is reporting on.
Go ahead.
No, that's all I have.
So, I'm specifically interested in incidents of inaccurate documentation of your time after you receive supervision and feedback about that. Are you saying that all incidents after that were due to rounding errors, or were there some incidents that were not due to rounding errors?
Great follow-up, thank you. The incident in regards to after the feedback first provided does not pertain to rounding instances. However, it does apply to the client's specific school schedule and the services that were no longer required at that time. I would also like to state and just sort of emphasize the level of autonomy that that was granted on this specific case without my certification from the BACB and how I was billing and operating under a registered behavior technician role, as it were. The instances in question after the supervision feedback were more so related to the client's schedule and my misjudgment.
college reports are at the time complaint?
Yeah, so the client's schedule was direct services were no longer required at a certain point. I believe it was 40 minutes until the conclusion of direct billing services. Direct services were no longer required due to the client transitioning to lunch and the goals and such that we were providing did not pertain to those sorts of settings and those activities. The client's location was also of inconvenience as the commute was at times over an hour from the client's location to other clients in cases that I had at that time. This is not not an excuse on my part or any denial of these actions, but more rather just painting a picture of what the situation was at that time and what sort of led me to those actions.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Another question? Okay. Dr. Davies, can you just give us some feeding estimate for the bridge? Right path.
and what does that right path look like to get at this point practice products and then, you know, what are our options? And so I think those are my statements, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Other committee members, comments or questions?
Dr. Raitson, and I would echo much of what was just shared, and would also want to learn more about what are the options. It is deeply concerning that as there was more autonomy, this seemed to be continuing and if not reported as occurring more frequently. And so I am very concerned with that. This wasn't a one-time issue. There was feedback and training provided, and this continued. So it is deeply concerning, and I would be interested in what the next steps are, similar to what was shared. It seems that this individual had developed great skill, and I'd be interested to think about what we do next. And what options are available moving forward for us to consider.
Thank you. Any other comments to consider?
I would just ask the Attorney General, when we talk about the fact that we need some discussion around these options, would you consider that legal advice?
I would, yeah.
If that's the case, then I'd like to make a motion to move into the executive session.
A second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Any further discussion? In favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay, so I will.
Motion carries. How do we arrange this executive session? We all hang up and call in to a different number.
Correct.
And then how do we let Mr. Oliver and DW know that we're back again and they want to join us?
Committee members, so you will be hanging up momentarily and calling into the executive session number, which is on the member portal. Mr. Oliver will reconnect and call back in. I will send him an email when he can call back in. And the complainant, okay. DW, as well.
Okay.
Thank you.